Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the All by the Popcorn podcast. I'm Alessandra.
And I'm Emily.
And today we are talking about Maestro, which is Bradley Cooper's second directorial debut, I guess. The sophomore film.
Just the second.
It's just the second film, which is, highly anticipated. He did such a great job with A Star Is Born that I think we are anticipating the same level and quality as that. But this is a biopic about Leonard Bernstein and his wife Felicia. And it's pretty good, I think. Like, generally a good biopic. What did you think?
I generally like biopics because it helps me, like, learn about people. I've obviously heard Leonard Bernstein's music, but I don't really know much about him as a person or his life. But honestly, I didn't feel like I learned this movie to me felt like a character study.
Yep.
Instead of like, this is what this person did at age, blah, blah, blah. They did this. And then at age, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know how like biopics can be really
meticulous.
Chronological. And yes, this was chronological. They can be very meticulous. They can be very like concise about what they are showing you about this person. And they could be a bit more informational, I guess. It feels like it. This one felt a little chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't quite sure. Like, I was getting these scenes. I was watching these scenes, and I was like, okay, this scene just happened. Not really quite sure what the takeaway was here,
yeah.
But it happened. And I'm like, okay, moving on. So, like, that's kind of how I felt throughout this movie. I didn't really know what was happening. The screenplay was a little, I couldn't quite understand what everyone was saying.
Right.
Even with captions on. I was having a hard time.
What are you
talking about? Everything felt so out of context. And I was like, am I supposed to know what's happening right now?
No, I totally agree with you. Like, I thought that as well. And I think that's kind of the essence that they were going for, where originally everybody is kind of talking in this doublespeak where it's the 1940s and 50s and stuff. Like, people are not saying what they mean to say, you know, like what they are saying is veiled in the times of like not talking about sex or talking about sexuality as overtly and bluntly. So they kind of say everything like with subtext. And you know, when it got into like the color version, it was definitely more like it was less subtext, but I still felt like their accents and their like transatlantic accents were like such an old timey feeling that it was like harder to connect with them when they were younger than when they were older and closer to our time.
Yeah, it really felt like when the movie was, so the black and white scenes were obviously when he was younger, and then like they got into color as he got older, and the huge differences of how the movie even felt, like stylistically, mm-hmm. and just the vibes were so different when it was in black and white than it was in color. It was like the movie felt so, like, I want to say caricature, but it felt very like whimsical and unreal when it was black and white, because we had like those musical sequences almost like with the sailors when they were on
stage.
That
was a total abstract dance number.
That was like a whole thing that happened.
Yeah.
And then we didn't really get those when the movie turned to color. So it was like, it was almost like the first half of the movie, like, wasn't even real, or the first part of the movie. This movie was 2 hours. This was definitely over by the before the middle of the movie. But like, that section of the movie, like, didn't feel real.
It's the beginning of their relationship. It's the honeymoon phase. I think that's definitely where we see the most life in the two characters. The time when Leonard is given his first chance and he's eager and bushy-tailed. And same with Felicia.
Yeah, he gets this call that someone doesn't show up, and he gets to conduct this. He was like on standby
at Carnegie Hall.
But it was like, you're on standby, but like, it's not going to happen, Leonard. Like, it's not going to happen. He's like, okay. But he gets the call and he's able to do it. And there's just like this shot of like, he's running like straight to the, like, it's almost as if he lives in the theater, but he doesn't. Like, it was just very, that's how it transitioned. And it was just super musical and super whimsical and like, so this movie was so engaging. I didn't really know what was happening most of the time, but it was very mesmerizing.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah, because watching the actors, I think, they're very mesmerizing actors, especially Carrie Mulligan. She's a joy to watch any moment that she's on the screen. So just kind of like having them be around each other and doing things together, and those like sweeping, beautiful shots, like cinematography that are just, you know, the black and white and the high contrast and shadows and things like that. It's very dreamlike. It's very enticing. And then we get into like the nitty gritty, like when the honeymoon phase is over, who are these people? And is their basis of love enough to keep them going?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, did you guys even really know each other when you got married? But then you're kind of just, they're figuring themselves out. But they're also still kind of figuring each other out, and you're kind of just seeing the ups and downs of marriage.
Yeah, it reminded me of being the Ricardos in that way, because even though that's like a small amount of time, you see this two really smart people in a couple, and men gonna be men, the audacity, and they really just have the audacity, right? And you're like, come on, Leonard, like, you're a better husband than that. You can be more discreet with your side pieces. You can be a little bit more loving towards your wife, who feels like you've been casting her aside for, you know, the proclivities of like men instead. And I think she just like gets to that point where she's like, do I love him despite his need to do this? And she does. And by the time it's the end, he sees her, and then she gets sick and dies. So it's like, oh, well, how convenient that she dies so that they don't have to worry about this anymore. It's like,
yeah.
Not that these two didn't love each other, because people are very, very complicated, and life is long. And sometimes you're unhappy and depressed, and sometimes you're not. Like, I think it's just the nature of these kinds of personalities, and the nature of somebody like Leonard Bernstein, who was an absolute genius. So,
yes, very much so. And you make these decisions when you're younger. It's like there's not a point in time where yes, there are more things about you that become solidified, like in your personality and just in your character in general, but you're a constantly changing being. And so decisions you make when you're of a younger age, you can definitely change how you feel about that decision you made.
Yeah. But they, you know, I think they ended on a high note with Leonard as a character, and he kind of redeems himself, I think, towards the end, obviously, as being more of a devoted husband to his ailing wife, and dying wife, and family. So I'm glad they kind of showed the ups and downs and the kind of ins and outs of his life, without honestly showing us too much of his conducting, like, or composing. They showed us some, but I think it's just like, it's really about the relationships. And that's kind of, I think it's very well done. And I do think it's one of the best movies that we've seen this year, just in terms of its scope.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know,
very well done.
We can talk about Bradley Cooper's performance because it's interesting.
Yes, I was watching. I watched most of this with my roommates. I think I started it and then they came in, and Casey and I were talking about how talented Bradley Cooper is.
Yeah.
He's very good in this. Like, he just morphs into whatever character he is portraying. Like, it's crazy. Like, seeing him and how he portrayed his character in A Star Is Born, mm-hmm. and now with this one, like, they're just so completely different.
Oh yeah.
And it's very, I feel like that there are actors where just I'm so solidified in who they are as a person that I'm like, okay, this person is this actress. I can't really see them as this character, but I feel like Bradley Cooper has been very good at like really taking on these different characters that he's been getting. And I just think he's crazy talented. Like I was floored by his performance.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible that he takes home the Oscar for something like this. Biopics are definitely common for best actors to win, or best actresses. So that is a big possibility. He, to me, had like the right amount of like zaniness that his kids have even said, like, that Bradley does a great job of bringing out the dad that they think they wanted to know as adults but didn't really get to know as well, because there's many sides of a person. Yeah. And they thought that it was nice that he was so kind of like excited and endeared to life, like such a passionate person, and truly Bradley like embraces that it full, like, wholeheartedly. And the makeup does an excellent job as well of like carrying the weight of the experience that the actor himself does not have. I think that the makeup artists were fantastic.
Yeah, I completely agree. The makeup was so good. And I kind of want to go back to you saying that there weren't very many conducting scenes, and there weren't, but the ones that we did get were usually pretty lengthy. Like, yeah. Like we would see like at the end there in that church, and yeah. in
the whole
and in another one, we just
yeah,
where the one where it's just on his face, he's younger, and it's I think it's that first one he gets the call for.
Yep.
And so he's there, and he's doing his first conducting, and you just see his face and these like facial motions that he's making, like, mm-hmm. it's so mesmerizing. It was crazy. I could not look away. I was like, what is happening right now? This man looks like he's possessed, like,
yeah,
conducting this orchestra, and it's very engaging.
Yeah, the one of him in the church is exactly that. It's a wildness. It's like a frantic sweat everywhere, hair everywhere, like such a physical performance. Incredibly difficult, I think, to do something like that when you're not yourself a conductor or a composer. So that is just one of the many incredible scenes that Bradley Cooper has.
Yeah, and another surprising, I didn't know that she was in this, but what is it? Sarah Silverman.
I don't feel like she's his sister.
Whose sister?
It's Leonard Bernstein's sister, Shirley Bernstein.
Oh, yes. I thought I thought you were saying it was I don't know. I thought you said that this was Bradley Cooper's sister. I'm like, what? They're not related.
No, they're not. But yes. They're not.
Yes, she was playing Shirley Bernstein. And I thought she did a really great job, too. And I don't feel like we see Sarah Silverman in, like, very serious roles like this. She was definitely playing, like a little dramatic, a little humorous of a character. Like, she was very... I wouldn't say funny, but, like, she was quirky, I guess. You can kind of say that.
She plays the role of the best friend confidant for the both of the main characters, so it's very convenient to have just one person be that, especially for Felicia. And when she has that conversation, like, Felicia has that conversation with Shirley, like, at a home during one of the holidays, and the kids are running around, and she's like, you know, I think I'm just gonna let him have what he wants. I think I'm ready to let go and, like, give that to him as a wife. And I was like, is she talking about, like, letting her husband, like, mess around with other people? Like, because it makes him less depressed. And it was. Like, it was, again, one of those really veiled conversations to bounce off of Shirley. And, you know, it just completely showed the, you know, the history of women and stuff. Like, you know, it's just like a real timeline of, like, all of the different factors of why these two people even got together in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
Can't be an out bisexual man really at any time until he's, like, he feels comfortable enough in, like, the 80s or whatever.
At the end there when he's dancing with his student.
Well, that's like in the 90s or something. Like, he, like, kind of comes out when he walks out to the orchestra and he's talking about, they're like, this is when he's kind of split up from his wife, and he goes out on stage wearing a, you know, a little ascot, and he has, like, a beard, and he's just kind of wearing a you know, more slim outfit, a little bit more gay, and he says something about the composer of that piece that they're going to do being himself and not being afraid to be himself. And he's like, so I'm going to, like, live out like I want to live. Again, like, a very veiled, like, not clear thing to do. But that was, like, you know, a source of his sadness and, like, depression, too, that he couldn't really be himself because, well, for one thing, he's married. But also, you know, it's not accepted in society to be bi. There's that. And then there's the fact that, like, his wife is just picking up the pieces at every moment. You know, she's a wife figure. She takes care of the house. Like, she's the person who knows the schedule. She's the person who takes care of the children. And she also has a job. And it's aggravating. It's like, just it's what's expected. It's
a lot to put on her. Like, expecting her to take on two jobs, apparently. Because, yeah, she had a full-on career when she first met Leonard, and then once you become married and have some kids, you kind of take on this second job.
A humongous second job that's never ending. And, you know, they did have, like, nannies, they had helpers throughout, so that was definitely very obvious, like, their wealth could afford them to do something like that, and they weren't shy about that. Like, they had two homes. I mean, one of their homes literally was on the route for the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Like, what?
Yeah, that scene was so amazing where, like, they have their fight after she puts his clothes out on the pillow. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what was that about? You just put my clothes out on the pillow? And then the kids are screaming out the door like, Mom, Dad, Snoopy's coming. And then Snoopy just comes down.
Right by.
Just goes right by the window. And I'm like, oh, there's Snoopy.
Yeah. And they're having this big fight, you know, about the situation that is frankly unfair to everyone. And there's no, like, winning.
It's like they're both not satisfied in their current situation, but they just are getting frustrated at each other and, like, kind of pointing blame on each other for it when it's just like, this is a decision you made. This is a decision you both made. And if it's not something that you want anymore, I mean, and they probably couldn't get divorced because of societal standards as well.
But they existed on an echelon where less common. It's possible, but I think it was hard because they did have this love for each other, and so they kept going back to each other, and eventually, like, being that person for each other. I mean, it's an incredible thing to have a family with someone and have that bond with them that she has with him that no one else will be able to have. Like,
true.
Did you notice that his boyfriend, was it William or Harry or something like that? It was not the princess.
Tommy? Timmy?
Tommy. It was Tommy. He was the guy, and I heard his voice and I saw his face, and immediately I was like, oh my God, he was the magician in
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yes.
Oh, he looked so different.
Yeah, he did. But his voice is, like, so particular, you know?
I wasn't paying attention, like, quite, like, to his voice. But yeah, like thinking back about it, I was like, yeah, if I was listening a bit more closely to his, I think I would have figured it out. But yeah.
Yeah. Good for that guy getting another role. He's great.
Yeah, he was really good.
Oh, the scene that kind of was crushing and sad was the one with his daughter, played by Maya Hawke, kind of hearing that the rumors of her dad being bi or messing around with guys, probably, and just kind of like being, you know, alarmed by that news, and him telling her that it's not true. Like, that scene was really crushing because her reaction is so relieved that that's not that isn't the reality, but it is. And he's like so sad that he can't share this part of himself with his daughter, even though he really wants to. And it's just like, you can't just put that stuff on your children either. So, you know, once she was old enough to, like, understand and accept it, she, you know, was kind of bitter about it, but she still loved her dad. So,
Because probably by that point, she figures out that he was lying to her originally.
Well, sure. I mean.
Yeah. And he hesitated so long. I was like, is he going to tell her?
I don't know. I mean.
And then he didn't. I was like, oh, okay.
You kind of, when you get to be an adult, you accept your parents for who they are, like, in good and bad. Like, it's just one of those moments that I think was so well done in a film about a family or in a film about a marriage. Like, that was one of, like, the writing moments I feel like really shined.
Yeah, that was a really good scene. Try to think if there was another really good scene that I liked.
The whole death, everything was just so upsetting. It was, it's really sad. So, like, I'm sitting here, like, watching this, like, trying to not get emotional. Of course, like, some tears are going down my face. Like, it's just, he's the tenderness and the love and the, like, performance from Carey Mulligan was incredible.
Yeah, she was really good. She was very, very good. Seeing, like, a lot of Carey Mulligan recently. We just watched her in Saltburn, obviously. And then we actually just watched the Weeping Angels episode of Doctor Who.
Oh, my God.
She's very good in.
Yeah, she is. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
So yeah, so I actually been seeing a lot of Carey Mulligan.
You have, yeah. I mean, I watched Pride and Prejudice pretty recently as well. You know.
Oh, yes. Definitely can't forget about that.
Yeah.
But definitely not complaining. Love
Carey Mulligan. She's amazing. So good. I mean, I would be really happy if she won Best Supporting Actress for this as well. The woman who...
Has she ever won an award?
I don't think so. No, she was just nominated for 2 Oscars. The past 2 were, let's see. She is just so pretty. I love her so much. She really reminds me of my friend Jenny. Like, I was especially watching her with this, you know, kind of accent, this like New York or transatlantic kind of posh-ish accent. And I was like, wow, this sounds just like Jenny. She got a nomination for being in an education in 2010. And then for best actress. And then
yes,
she did the same in Promising Young Woman a couple of years ago.
Aw, oh, man.
So, I mean, I think the person who got supporting actress at the Golden Globes was Divine Richards, I think that's her name. Joy, Divine Joy something. She's in the for holdovers.
For 2021?
For the Golden Globes that just happened 2 days ago.
Oh, well.
That's who won. So when we talk about the holdovers, we're going to analyze. We're going to see who we think should win.
We will definitely be doing that this year, like we always do. Let's see, any other? I mean, this movie was just so centered around
the two,
Bradley Cooper and Carey Mulligan.
Exactly, yeah.
That we can really only, I mean, obviously everyone else in it was very good, but like the more substantial stuff to dissect was with these two characters. I actually thought that the scene where the two of them like meet up with Matt Bomer and Matt Bomer's wife.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
And they kind of go off in the same direction, and you kind of see this because they were together at the beginning of the movie.
He's in love with him, like for sure. So yes,
like, and there was this conversation that Carey Mulligan and or that Felicia and Leonard were having that made it sound like she knew about his situation, she was okay with it, and she was gonna like she was like, I'm okay with this. And I was like, thruple?
but I don't think it was,
obviously that wasn't gonna happen, but you know, I could dream.
I think that's possibly what Leonard like in maybe had thought about, because he even brought up like he brought Tommy around and he wanted Tommy to like stay in the family.
You like Tommy, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, I like Tommy.
And he kept saying like, he's so intelligent. And it's like, are you sure? You keep saying that. And are you sure he's not just a pretty face? Because I haven't heard him say anything substantial.
The desperation in his voice when he would, to be like, he's so smart. So intelligent, so smart, so talented.
Yeah, like, and he's like, okay. You think Jamie would like him? Like, and she's like, what? Like, he just like has this desire and need to like keep him around, and I think it was just kind of like grasping at straws at that point. Apparently, is that Tom? Let's see. I'm not trying to figure out exactly what his name was. I think it's Tommy Tom. There's actually like an interesting trivia about him. Let me make sure that is him. Tom. There's some pretty good trivia actually. If we want to go to a break and then we can talk about some of that.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional.
Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, we are back. Still looking for the character of Tommy in this list.
It's Tommy Cothran.
Yes.
Gideon Glick.
Gideon Glick. Okay, so it is actually him. So in this trivia about, you know, the real Leonard Bernstein, it says, although the extent of Leonard Bernstein's relationship with the musicologist and composer Thomas Cothran is implied in the movie, it is never stated outright that Bernstein actually left Felicia in 1976 to pursue that romance. He did return to her the following year when she was diagnosed with breast cancer that killed her in 1978. Despite being 29 years younger than Bernstein, Tom Cothran actually predeceased him. Cothran died in 1987 of complications from AIDS. This led to Bernstein lending his support to various AIDS organizations in the last years of his life. A few months after Tom's death, Bernstein produced Music for Life, a celebrity benefit at Carnegie Hall for AIDS activist organization Gay Men's Health Crisis.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was a little, like, you could tell by how Leonard was getting older that, like, you knew that these were different points in his life, but just things would just change so suddenly that it was like getting whiplash. You're like, oh, where are we now? Oh, what's happening now? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because, yes, I think he did mention, like, them being separated for a bit, and then, but it just, like, it was seconds. It had been seconds, and mm-hmm. they were, like, just together. So it was like, what had happened during this time? Like, they're just, okay, just a length of time has happened.
Yeah.
You don't even know what happened or when it happened or whatever.
Yeah, it's a little bit vague. And I think, like,
it's very vague.
this movie is long, it's vague. It is a little vague, you know, and I think it's supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be a vibe. Like you said, it doesn't really have to be as, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this, you know, it's like, okay, like, we're moving on.
It doesn't
have
to be. Would I appreciate it because I'm learning about someone I don't really know?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Would I have appreciated that? Yes.
Yeah. Sure.
For me specifically learning, yes. But for the vibes, do whatever floats your boat, honey.
That's hilarious.
Also, getting Clint Eastwood vibes from Bradley Cooper right now, I just thought about that.
Oh my god, yes. And the directing, too. Like,
yes. The directing and starring in his films.
I think that definitely Clint Eastwood has a lot more realism than Bradley's direction and style. For the two movies that we have seen him direct, it does seem like his kind of Hollywood glamour fits well with the style that he wants to play, like the drama that he wants to portray. I think it does matter to have a good screenplay, and he is one of the writers of this movie, along with the writer Josh Singer. He's done a lot of other things.
He's done some really good stuff.
Yeah.
He did, like, The Post, and
I mean, Spotlight.
Spotlight.
I mean, that is an amazing screenplay. It really does. I mean, he wrote some West Wing, 26 episodes of the West Wing. So, like, I'm a fan for sure. Like, he does have some good drama, and well done, I think, for Josh Singer.
Yeah.
So, again, could get a screenplay nomination as well on that part.
Did you see how many producers were for this movie? I saw Scorsese and I saw Spielberg.
Oh, I didn't even notice. That is hilarious. Oh my
God, so many huge. I was like, what? Dude. What?
They like, want him insane. To be the next them, like Spielberg and Scorsese are like, okay, we're passing on the reins to you, Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Crazy.
The shirt he wore when talking to his daughter, Jamie, the sweatshirt with the Hebrew lettering, it says Harvard, spelled out phonetically in Hebrew.
Oh, is that the crew neck he was wearing?
Yes. And I'm gonna read this very important trivia that obviously has a much better way of concisely saying this than I would. For the title role, Bradley Cooper wore a prosthetic nose to better amplify his resemblance to Leonard Bernstein. This drew accusations of Jew face and criticism from writers Daniel Feinberg and Ben M. Freeman and actress Tracy Ann Oberman, among others. However, Bernstein's children, Alexander Bernstein, Jamie Bernstein, and Nina Bernstein, defended Cooper's decision, calling the criticism disingenuous, and received a statement of support from the ADL.
Wow. All right.
Okay.
I thought this one was really cute because you were talking about, like, passing the baton on to Bradley Cooper. It was like, Steven Spielberg was considered for directing this movie, but when Bradley Cooper showed him an early cut of A Star Is Born, Spielberg walked over to Cooper after the Shallow scene and said to him, "You're directing Maestro."
Oh. That is exactly. He's like, "You do this. I don't want to do this."
He's like, "You can do it. I'm going to go on vacation. I'm going to go to Maui."
Yeah. Carrie Mulligan thought her older makeup looked like her own mother, so she took a selfie and sent it to her mother and her kids. She says the kids hated it. They were like, "Mommy, what are you doing? Take it off." She added, "It was pretty disturbing. The whole thing is a little bit disturbing for the family. Seeing your mother or your daughter or your wife's age, it's a lot."
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Because like it was really good makeup.
Age filters that were going around.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, there's no other trivia I want to read unless there's anything you see.
No, I think that's it.
Okay. This movie got... Oh, well, you have to say the clock keywords. I'm sorry. I was already...
Oh, yes. Let me do that. Oops. Here we go. We've got bisexual man. Hey, hey, hey. Marriage, love, gay affair, cigarette smoking.
Oh, it's always about the gay stuff. It's every time.
But hey, at least this is proving that bisexual people exist.
Oh, because they got their own tag on IMDb. It's undeniable.
They're real, everyone.
Yes, they are.
They exist. And they may be... I mean, this was this movie, right?
Yeah, and so many bisexual people have existed, and so many of them may be just your favorite composers of classics like West Side Story and On the Town.
Yeah, my romance novel I'm reading right now has bisexual characters in it, and it's a good old time.
Yeah, more fun for everybody. This movie got a 77 Metascore. It got 49 positive reviews, 12 mixed reviews, and 0 negative reviews. And there are 7 100s on here. 7.
Oh, damn.
The lowest is a 40 from the Christian Science Monitor.
Okay, well, I don't know if I want to read that one.
Well, you can read the 50 from Larson on Film.
Oh, it is the lowest. I have to read it. All right, here we go. Oh, all right. Christian Science Monitor gave it a 40, directed by Cooper, who also co-wrote the script with Josh Singer. The film serves up so much Sturm und Drang, about the great man's messed up private life that it barely bothers to explore his creative genius.
Sturm und Drang. Let's see what that means. It means a literary and artistic movement in Germany in the late 18th century, influenced by Jean-Jacques Rousseau and characterized by the expression of emotional unrest and rejection of neoclassical literary norms. It also means turbulent emotion or stress. There we go. Okay.
But if this movie didn't really help us get to know the character, get the person as a person, then we would just be seeing a documentary. Peter.
It is interesting that he wanted to see his creative genius more, but I mean, is that the most interesting thing about him? That's not
stuff that
what
people
they
have
wanted.
Widely experienced, like yes. The West Side Story, On the Waterfront, On the Town. I have seen all of these movies.
Yeah.
Me, a 30-year-old woman, has,
yeah,
have seen all of these, have experienced all of this music. So I already know his creative genius.
I think that he wanted to get into the mind of a genius, which there are other things and other movies that literally do that exact thing, including a TV show called Genius. So if you'd like to go watch that, it's about
what's that?
It's just a show. Like, it was like an anthology show. Oh. I think one of them was like about, you know, Picasso or something. I don't know. I didn't watch
it.
Oh,
were these on Netflix?
I don't think so, but it's possible.
I remember there being like an episodic, like little documentary show or something that was on.
Yeah.
Genius?
No, I think this was like a scripted show, but
okay,
it came out a while ago. But like, there's also other, you know, other genius men that have been overly exposed in our media, you know. So.
Yeah.
Or great individuals, including Oppenheimer, which the entire movie is about his genius as well. So, you know, maybe go watch that instead.
Yeah. I mean, this movie was very stylized and a little different. And that might not be to everyone's taste.
I'm going to read the Screen Crush 50. It says, "This couple's connection feels authentic and lived in. But I must confess that at a certain point, I began to feel like an additional dimension was missing, some sort of tangible connection between Bernstein's outward persona and his marital stresses, or between his sexuality and the steps he took to hide it and his musical output." That is true. I agree with you, Matt Singer.
I very much agree with this.
Yes. That is a really good blurb. You were literally trying to say that thing. You were like, there's something there that is not... it's like... I feel you just articulate.
It's always a feeling. It's a feeling that I can never put into words. I'm like something was not there. Was there, but was off. I know.
An additional dimension was missing, as Matt Singer says. Like, that is exactly right. I totally agree.
Thank you, Matt. That's exactly how I was feeling.
I love
Thank
it.
Thank you for putting my jumbled up mess of a mind into words.
Yeah. I'm going to try to get a green one in here. Let's see. Okay, I'm just going
to
read this.
I'm going to start picking one of the 100s to read.
So yeah, do it. I'm going to read this 75 from USA Today, mostly because it references Tar. Maestro offers a counterpart of sorts to last year's Tar, whereas Cate Blanchett's look at a fictional conductor is a more insightful look at the complicated aspects of artistry. Cooper's work succeeds in bringing an American legend to life while also examining his humanity.
Aw. There you go.
I'm glad that they referenced Tar, because I was literally like, didn't we just watch a movie about a composer? Which also had the, like, that was more of like a thriller, so, but the genius was so clear and also really abrasive, whereas this one was just like drama, like emotional drama, you know?
Yeah, but both kind of have that same vibe of like, it's hard to be enough for a genius or be in love with a genius. It's just there's always
exactly right. It's like, oh, it's so hard to be in love with a genius because you can't control them. It's like, it's just a man. He's just a man.
They're not going to be what you want them to be.
They're never going to be what you want them to be. Exactly.
I had completely forgotten about Tar until you just brought that up.
I was
like, oh, right.
Oh, right. Yeah, that movie. That was a wild movie. Oh, man.
I am going to do the Time 100.
Okay.
So we've got here. This is a complex and sophisticated picture, the kind of grown-up love story we see all too rarely these days, especially when it comes to starry, big-ticket movie making. It's entertaining and robust and forthright. It's also tremendously sad, not necessarily in a bring-your-hanky way, but in a deeper, more truthful way.
Okay. Sure. I think I agree with that about 80%, which is probably 80%? Why I think that this movie, in my opinion, deserves like an 82-83%.
Okay, just a little bit of a bump. Just a little bit of a bump to knock out the Christian Observer, the Christian whatever it was called. Monitor.
Yeah. Because it is a good movie. It is missing a little bit. It's not a perfect movie, but it's entertaining. It's a period piece. Love those. So
it's easily accessible, which we love that for us these days.
Yeah.
We all know the struggle that's about to rain down upon us as the Oscar noms come out and only six of the 11 movies are available to watch.
We were doing our best here, everybody. We had a very busy year. I think you can forgive our trespasses.
And the year has just started, and it's already an even busier year for me. So,
yes. So,
and for you, Miss Married Woman.
Yeah, I'm really busy as well. But you know what? I never am too busy to fit in this podcast because I enjoy talking about movies and watching them with you.
We'll always make time for this podcast. Wow, I stumbled over my words.
Okay. I don't have anything else to say.
Yeah, I think we're done here. All right. That was Maestro. It is on Netflix, so definitely check that out. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and IMDb. We are also on Amazon Music, Spotify, and Acast. If you'd like to email us, please do that at allbythepopcornpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow our social media. We have Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. Just search All By The Popcorn or All By The Popcorn Podcast. And we have merch, so please check that out. But thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you in the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.